The Big Story is brought to you by Scotiabank. Small towns have their own challenges. We've talked about those before. But they also have a lot of benefits. Everyone knows everyone. You can always borrow a cup of sugar. You don't have to lock your doors, maybe. And there's a community that can come together in times of triumph or tragedy in a way that it's difficult to do in a gigantic city. Small towns and cities are also susceptible to trends. Because these places are just smaller, their ecosystem is a little more fragile, and a small shift, a spike or a drop in a critical statistic, a small change that leads to another small change and then another, can create ripples that can cascade through the entire town. And that's what's happened in Wetaskiwin, Alberta, a city that numbers say is growing more dangerous every year. So what happened to push this little city up the rankings of Canada's most dangerous places? What's the community doing about it? And if small differences have made for a large change, how can they tip the scales back in the other direction? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Aaron Hutchins, one of our favorite guests, reporter at Maclean's, one of the team working on the Most Dangerous Places in Canada project, an annual project that takes a look at crime statistics across the country. Aaron, tell me about Wetaskiwin.
Wetaskiwin is a town of about just under 13,000 people. It's an hour's drive south of Edmonton, Alberta. It's a pretty regular prairie town in that they have kids out playing football at night, hockey rink, swimming pool. When you drive into Wetaskiwin, what you also notice is what they call there the auto mile, because there's so many auto dealerships.
Okay.
And that's because they've made a small industry out of the idea of selling cars for less in Wetaskiwin than in Edmonton. So if you're in the market for a car and you live somewhere in Alberta, they have this nice little jingle that says, cars cost less in Wetaskiwin.
Cars cost less in Wetaskiwin.
So when you go there, it's kind of a thing where you say, what's Wetaskiwin like? And they say, well, you know, cars cost less here.
That's a thing to be known for.
Yeah.
But we're not talking about Wetaskiwin because of the price of cars.
We are not.
Why are we talking about it?
Every year, Maclean's looks at the Statistics Canada's Crime Severity Index, and we do a ranking of the most dangerous places in Canada. And Wetaskiwin is not the most dangerous place in Canada, but it unfortunately has the place where the crime severity is rising fastest than anywhere else in Canada over the last 5 years.
So you went there?
I did.
What did you see, aside from the auto mile?
I took a couple tours there. I took a tour with a local. I took a tour with a politician. I took a tour with a police officer. And one thing you notice is, depending on who you talk to and who you chat with, they have very different points of view. The local who I spoke with, she's self-described as poor. She's a house cleaner, lives in a rented basement suite. And she is around crime more than she would like to be. She was showing about a business that she used to clean, and then she pointed to kind of these bushes just behind it on the dead end street. And she said a couple of years ago there was a young First Nations woman who was essentially dead, just left there in the bushes. She drove me around where she lived or used to live, and there was she talked about simple petty things like she's an artist on the side, and she'd have paint cans in her backyard, and folks would just walk through the back alley and just take paint cans. Gangs would do that. You see the shoes with the laces tied over wires to say, here, this is where a drug drop is. And last year, there was a stabbing in a parking lot just about a block away from where she lived. And that really affected her because that was, two killings the last couple of years that were relatively close to where she was. And she really wanted to do something. So she held a violence vigil in a park next to her because she really wanted to shed light on the fact that there is a growing crime problem in Wetaskiwin. Then you take the tour with the politician.
Right. Did you look at the same areas when you go with the politician, or did he go somewhere else completely?
They took us somewhere else completely.
Yeah.
Different part of town. So when I went with the deputy mayor, he brought me to the part of town that he honestly said he knew the story was about crime. He understood that the city had its problems. He himself told me that he's never experienced crime before. So when he drove me to town, he showed me that it was at night and there was, kids out playing football under the lights. It was minor football practice. There were parents who were patiently waiting outside the hockey arena for their kids to come out. There was it was kind of what you would think of any nice small prairie town where there's sports, parents out waiting and watching, but that's on the other side of town. Mm-hmm. And then when you go with the cop cars, they kind of point out places where they've, I guess, trouble spots or hot spots, and often it's areas that are lower income. And what you notice is that, at least what I notice is that If you're a mother of two and you want to avoid crime in town and you have the means, the financial means to, you can live in a relatively safe area of town. If you don't have those financial means and you are living in the areas where things are a bit rougher, then you'll notice that it's getting harder to ignore the fact that there's a growing crime problem in Pasquin.
So explain to me how it relates to the crime severity index, because we've talked about two murders relatively close to where a woman lives, but we've also talked about graffiti and paint cans. So how does all that come together to paint a picture of the town?
Well, the crime severity index is, I won't get into the details of how it works, but the idea is some crimes are more severe than others. So if there are a million shoplifting charges and zero assaults and zero murders in town, then that might be relatively low.
Yeah.
If it is a town where there's no one stealing, but there's just rampant murders, hypothetically, then that would be relatively high. So each crime kind of has a different weight to it. What Wetaskiwin, what's really driving their crime increase over the last 5 years is assault. They're dealing with lots of assaults. I think the aggravated assault numbers have gone up tenfold over the last 5 years. And when I spoke with the police, they obviously don't dispute these numbers because they are their numbers.
Right, they're filing the charges.
Yeah, but what they see is they're also seeing a kind of an increase in property crime. A lot of motor vehicle thefts, and that seems to be the property crime. That seems to be their focus this year because they also aren't, you know, a massive police force. They are, you know, a couple dozen. So they understand from their own stats, they say that 80% of the property crime is done by 8% of the criminals. So they are expanding a crime reduction unit to really focus on that 8% because that way it'll really cut down.
And in a town that small.
In a town that small, that would make a big difference in property crime.
Yeah, you arrest two or three of those 8% of the criminals and it's a drop.
In property crime. That may have a secondary effect on assaults, but I guess it's really tough to tell. Say, like, listen, if you stop people from stealing cars, are people going to stop getting in fights in the streets or at bars or whatnot? And that's one thing where the politicians I spoke with, including the mayor, city councilors, deputy mayor, they all told me that Wetaskiwin doesn't have a crime problem. They would say that. They would say, if anything, there's a crime severity index problem because their population is relatively small compared to Toronto or Montreal.
Right.
They'll talk about how with the population so small, every single assault or the two homicides from last year, that will really ramp up their numbers.
Right.
To a degree is true. It also ignores the fact that assault numbers have been on the rise for the last 5 years quite steadily. There is something to it as opposed to this just being a one-year blip.
Up next.
And then these photos go up on a Facebook page called the Wetaskiwin Rant and Rave, and then just kind of perpetuates this negative stereotype of folks who are just looking for a place to sleep some warmth.
You can save like never before with the Scotiabank Momentum Plus Savings Account. And now, for a limited time, you can earn up to 3.2% interest until March 10th. You can find all the terms and conditions at scotiabank.com/MP. So what's the reason, or I guess there's probably a few theories, but what are the theories behind what drives increases of crime in a town like Wetaskiwin?
I think it's a different perception of what the police say and what locals will say. The police will talk a lot about a transient population of people who are just coming through town and they will steal cars, steal stuff, and then move on to the next town. A couple of locals told me that there's a perception that could very well be inaccurate, that at least First Nations people are a cause a lot of the petty crime around town. And there's a city just south called Maskwacis where they had the last residential school closed in 1973. And I talked to several folks from there. And there's obviously a lot of intergenerational trauma there. Mm-hmm. There's lack of work opportunities. It's a dry reserve. So oftentimes some of the folks that want to drink, they will hitchhike up to Wetaskiwin and just hang out and drink. The police told me that these folks are generally quite harmless. They just hang out, they drink, they chat. But Wetaskiwin also has a homeless problem in that they don't have a single shelter. And all these folks have no place to sleep. So what these folks end up doing, and they're often First Nations, is they're sleeping inside a bank just by the entryway or inside a post office or inside apartment buildings. And then these photos go up on a Facebook page called Wetaskiwin Rant and Rave, and then just kind of perpetuates this negative stereotype of folks who are just looking for a place to sleep some warmth. But when you see these folks who are in your apartment building or drunk or passed out causing a minor ruckus, then a police force that feels like it doesn't have enough boots on the ground, they're focusing on these folks as opposed to the assaults or the other ones.
It's so the easy way to make it look like we are doing something.
Well, in a way. And also they have to because folks are calling. So it takes away resources from what are the more serious crimes out there.
What did you see in terms of the divide between the residents who want the crime problem acknowledged and hopefully acted on and the politicians who say that there is no crime problem. What's that dynamic like?
It's interesting. The politicians, it's interesting how they frame it, because when they talk about the growing crime problem, they'll say that the assaults, let's say, are often people who are known to each other. But what they're essentially trying to say is that if you are Joe Q Public, who's just, you know, walking down the street with your two kids,
right,
you're not going to be robbed, you're not going to be mugged, you're not going to have any home invasion. So to that extent, that is true, but that doesn't change the fact that there are other folks in town who are being assaulted, who are getting beat up. And just the fact that they're known to each other, I think if you were to talk to them, they probably wouldn't care. If they're calling in assault charges, they don't say, well, I happen to know this buddy of mine and we got into a drunken argument or whatnot. That really doesn't change anything.
So one of the reasons we wanted to talk to you about Wetaskiwin is because McLean's does this every year.
We do.
And I mean, maybe not every year, but there's always kind of a different city or town that you take a hard look at. And what has struck me about it following the series for years is that there's like two ways a town can go when they end up profiled in a series like this, right? And the divide we were just talking about is kind of, you know, you can either acknowledge it and take it as a step forward, or you can kind of double down on fixing the image. Give me an example of a city that's actually confronted the problem. Because I feel like this is something we could be talking about with any town.
Well, that's exactly it. And that's what, when I went into town, I said, like, let's find some examples of how you're addressing it and see what works and what doesn't work. And you're right, Wetaskiwin is saying there's not a crime problem that's any different than any other town, its size. And they kind of talked about how it being the population being a factor and it being a transient population being a factor. They've added 3 police officers in the last 2 years. The mayor told me he's budgeted for 2. But I suppose getting at the root cause of the problem, or how to change how the city thinks of it. Yeah, they're trying to, in a sense, reassure the population that there's not a problem. In Estevan, Saskatchewan, which is another prairie town a ways away, about the same population, it's just a little bit smaller. 5 years ago, they were ranked the 20th most dangerous place in Canada in the McLean's rankings. And when their police chief came to town in 2014, he noticed right away that there was a drug problem in town, cocaine, crack cocaine. And he told me, like, no town wants to say we have a drug problem. No town wants that on them, especially when towns are trying to encourage people to come visit. You don't want to say, hey, come find a new job and home in Estevan, by the way, have a drug problem. But what he did is he said to the city, we have to own up to this. We have biker clubhouses. We have massage parlors. We have organized crime. He talked about 2 things. There's community policing and community engagement. He said community policing is cops showing up at barbecues, just being present in the community. He said community engagement for him was really establishing that trust between citizen and police, that they would trust in one another. Because cops, as smart as they are, they don't solve crimes by themselves. They need video. They need witnesses. They need people who are willing to chat. So what he did is he said to the city, we have a drug problem. We have to do something. If you know anything, we won't say your name, but we should do something about this for you and for your kids. And he said, simply by saying that, he said he wouldn't believe the amount of calls that came in. People saying, yeah, so-and-so, this person, dealer here, whatever. And
you're empowering the people.
He was. And after empowering the people, he said that he wanted to treat it like a business, his police force, which is not something you would say typically about police, but he said, we're in the business of community safety. So what they did is like a good business, they started calling people back all the time. So if someone called in for a, saying, oh, I heard some broken windows, a couple streets, doors down, I don't know what it was, maybe it's a break-in or whatnot, they would go check it out. Or they would call and say, hey, there's this person who is all over the road, could be a drunk driver.
Come take a look.
So they would go take a look, and they would find something. And they would call the person back saying, hey, 3 days ago, you called us about what you thought might be someone drunk driving. Well, we found the person. He blew 4 times over the limit, and he's under arrest. And because you called us, you may have saved a life that day. So thank you.
Wow.
So what that does for that person is, one, they feel good that they've potentially saved someone's life, but also the police took what they had into consideration.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've called police here in Toronto before whenever I suspect something's happening, and they listen to me, and they take it and say, well, look under it. Now, I don't get a call back. Now, it doesn't stop me from calling again if I see something. But if you're a person who didn't believe the police did anything,
yeah,
and that was the reason for you not calling them, because what's the point? They're not going to do anything. If police starts calling you back saying, hey, by the way, you really helped, it really rallies the community around each other. And now Estevan is the fastest shrinking on the crime severity index in the last 5 years. Now, there's other things that they've done as well, but that is one thing that at least changes the mindset of the city to say, we have a drug problem. Back then, they were 20th most dangerous place. Now they're 96th.
And that's a technique. Like, I know it's obviously a difficult technique to implement in a city like Toronto or Vancouver or somewhere where you have X million people and however many police officers. But when you're in a city like Wetaskiwin or Estevan, where these people know the cops, where they're on their street and there's, you know, 12 of them in town.
I think the idea is it's not that every police force should start, you know, calling every single person back. But I think it's a lesson that if you can, these are some of the positive effects that you will get from this route.
What are the police planning to do in Wetaskiwin?
So the police, they added 3 officers in the last 2 years. They're asking for 3 more. I think they're going to get 2 more is what the mayor told me. So they're working on a crime reduction unit. They feel as though a lot of times they just are playing catch up. Yeah. So if someone is out on bail or on probation, those folks are supposed to be under house arrest. So if you have more a dedicated crime reduction unit team that studies analytics, that studies crime hotspots, but also can go knock on doors to make sure that folks who are under curfew are actually abiding by their curfew, then that will save a lot of the problems further down. And the other things they're doing are just, it seems so simple, but you have to understand the mentality of small town Alberta is a bit different. They're dealing with cars being stolen. They were happening so often that the police chief had a colleague look through every single file of 2017 for when a car was stolen. And he found that just under 40% of the time, the keys were there. The car was running. The key was under the visor of an unlocked car. The garage door was unlocked and the key was hanging on a nail. So what they're doing now is, it sounds so simple if you live in a big city, but in a small town, understand that mindsets are different.
Yep.
They're going to go around from neighborhood to neighborhood and just get people to lock their cars.
Huh?
Because if you just lock your car and keep your keys in your pocket, that will, I mean, it's not right that someone, and the police chief told me this, or the inspector told me this, it is not right, the inspector told me, that someone will go to your house and take your car. That is wrong.
But
if you lock the car and kept the keys in your pocket, it probably wouldn't happen because they're crimes of opportunity. These folks that are homeless, I chat with them. They're all friendly. They drink. They talked about lack of work opportunity. They talked about lack of work opportunity on the reserve. They come here because they're bored. And when I was chatting with one of them, there was a group of 4 or 5 guys just sitting on a, you know, behind a liquor store. Some were chatting with me, some weren't. One guy who wasn't was just sitting by himself, and another guy kind of just came by and just asked him, he's like, hey man, did you get charged? And the guy's like, for what? And the guy said, that knife. And he goes, oh, no. And then he saw a journalist with a notepad and all of a sudden introduced himself and walked away.
Yep.
So no word on what happened to that knife. When I talked to police about that, they said, these homeless folk, sometimes they get robbed from other homeless folk. And some of them are a bit older. Some of them aren't as agile as they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
So they started carrying knives to protect themselves.
And that's how a problem starts.
And that's how a problem starts.
Worse.
That's exactly it. So you have someone who's just going for, you have a homeless problem, turns into a robbery issue, turns into a weapons offense.
And then you have aggravated assault, and that's at the root of the severity index.
That's how things get from something small. If you just had a thing in town that could handle the homeless issue, handle the issue of work opportunity, getting these folks on their feet, help them out with their addictions issues, then you wouldn't have the robberies and you wouldn't have knife charges. It wouldn't escalate to that. That's how something small, you know, snowballs into something much bigger and much worse, and something that Wetaskiwin needs to get a hold of.
Aaron Hutchins, reporter at Maclean's, still the title holder for most appearances on this podcast. That was The Big Story, brought to you by Scotiabank. You can earn up to 3.2% interest until March 10th with the Scotiabank Momentum Plus Savings Account. Conditions apply. For more from us, visit us at thebigstorypodcast.ca or find us and all our sister and brother shows at frequencypodcastnetwork.com. You can also hit us up on social media at Big Story Podcast on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, and you can subscribe to us or any of our other podcasts wherever you get them. On Apple, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on Google, etc. They're all free. We want you to rate them. We want you to review them. We want you to tell us how we can get better. We want you to tell us that you love us. If you do. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We will talk tomorrow.